recorder's going. No, no. No. Wait. Allison came in last class. She's not here yet. Elizabeth is here. Cadence is here. No Nick yet. Gage is here. I think he's doing baseball. Eli. And Charright. So, as we should know, because you should have gotten the email, exam number two is tomorrow, because that's what we voted on Monday. But the content was ended last class. So today what we're going to do is we're going to start Congress. That is not on the exam. So kind of take notes, kind of listen, but your brain should be thinking public opinion, socialization, all that stuff, and federalism. All right. We know in our federalist system, in our Constitution is enshrined with the concept of checks and balances, as well as separation of powers. Why? What is separation of powers?
The total powers of the government being divided into different branches so that not one section holds all of the power.
Very good. Perfect. Good, simple definition. Why do we have checks and balances?
To make sure that no branch oversteps.
Who can stop a branch from overstepping?
Either of the other two.
Either of the other two. Perfect. Excellent. So, the basic powers of government are basically making laws, enforcing laws, and punishment under the laws. Those are the powers that were divided. Going back to Montesquieu, who argued the only way to have a free society to basically protect the people is to take the powers of government and divide them up and put them in the hands of different groups. Our founding fathers embraced that notion and gave us in our Constitution a legislative branch, an executive branch, and a judicial branch. Congress. The Congress of the United States is our legislative branch. Now, any of you ever heard of the 1920s, 30s, and 40s comedian by the name of Will Rogers? He once quipped a joke that I loved and I included in my notes. He once said, "When Congress makes a law, it's a joke. And when Congress makes a joke, it's a law." Many people in our country throughout our history, particularly as we saw with the evolution and changing of federalism, have a negative opinion of Congress. Not because we don't like the idea of separation of powers, but sometimes we don't like what the laws are. Of course, it's Congress that makes that determination. What is Congress? Simple. It is the body of our federal government that's entrusted with two primary responsibilities. They are the lawmaking branch, but they are also in charge of oversight, meaning that is the body that engages in government review. They are the ones that are supposed to review the operations of government and make sure government functions properly. Question so far, yes?
This might be like a little bit of like a repetitive question, but so are the Senate and the House of Representatives also part of Congress?
They are.
So Congress is just another name for
Congress is a bicameral legislative body. So Congress is the House plus the Senate.
Okay, all right. And that is our legislative branch.
For the country,
okay.
Yes.
All right. Perfect. All right.
By the way, Massachusetts also has a state legislative body. Okay. It's called the Great and General Court. They operate on Beacon Hill. And there is a Senate and there is a House. But that's commonly referred to as the State Senate and the State House.
Yeah.
This is the National House and Senate. All right. What creates Congress? Well, the Constitution. Constitution makes Congress. And its powers come from Article 1, Section 1. Article 1, Section 1 literally gives all legislative power to Congress. So, can the president make a law? No. Can the president suggest a law? Yes. The president can also veto a law. That's part of the checks and balances that we're going to talk about. Can the courts suggest a law? No. But the courts can make law when they use judicial review. But they can't make statutes. In what areas can Congress make laws? In? Well, again, we've already talked about it. Article 1, Section 8. Clauses 1 through 18 gives Congress the right to make laws dealing with the taxes and borrowing money and regulating commerce and making rules of nationalization, rules dealing with bankruptcy, maintaining a currency, punishing counterfeiters, building post offices and roads, protecting patents and copyrights, making the lower courts. Constitution makes the Supreme Court, but Congress has the power by law to make all of the lower courts. Congress can also make laws that punishes pirates. Arr, pirates, matey. Congress also has the authority to declare war. Congress can raise and support a national army. They can create a navy. And they can call forth on the states to organize state militias. Those are all of the powers that can be found in Article 1, Section 8. If you did not look them over for the first exam, please do so. These are the expressed powers. These are the things that literally the Constitution gives to Congress. But, as we also know, the Supreme Court, beginning with the Marshall Court, allowed Congress to delve into areas that are commonly referred to as implied powers. We looked at it in federalism. This is one of the cases you should know for federalism. McCulloch v. Maryland. The power to tax is the power to destroy. But in it, even though there was nothing in the Constitution that allowed the Congress to expressly make the Bank of the United States, Chief Justice John Marshall said, wait, you take all those commerce powers and you put them with the necessary and proper clause. Article 1, Section 8. Sorry, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 18. That's what I was trying to say. The necessary and proper clause is where Congress gets its implied powers from. And, as mentioned, the Constitution also gives Congress the power to check and balance other branches. Check and balance number one. Impeachment. Congress has the power to go through the impeachment process for the president, for the vice president, for all of the cabinet members, and all of the federal judges. So check and balance power number one, impeachment. Check and balance power number two. Congress, as I said, has oversight over the executive agencies. Congress can make the rules on how the agencies are supposed to operate. Congress can cut funds to agencies if they fail to operate in a way that's good for the people. The Senate, and specifically the Senate, which I'll talk about when we talk about the specific powers of the Senate, has the power of advice and consent for all presidential nominations. So if the president wants a member of the cabinet, you maybe had the chance to watch some of those cabinet secretary hearings. They have to appear before the Senate, answer questions, because they won't get the job unless the Senate votes in their favor. But that's only the Senate. The House has no role.
It's kind of silly. I think it's kind of silly.
Not at all.
No?
Not at all, based on the original intent. The Senate was supposed to be the chamber that represents the states. And so, obviously, the one way to make sure that the executive deals with all the states equally is to give the body that represents the states the authority to check and balance any person he wants to put in office. Last but not least, the Senate also ratifies treaties. The president can get into what's known as a presidential agreement, but a presidential agreement only lasts so long as the president's in office. But if the president wants us to join a treaty, which is a legally binding agreement, the United States will only do so if the Senate votes for it by a two-thirds majority. Again, when we were talking about the compromises, that also was to protect the states. All right, that is a quick overview of what the Congress does. Any questions before we start digging into the weeds?
What do I title the section?
Congress?
This is just Congress.
You can start exam three.
Got it.
All right. The Congress operates based on terms. Terms of time. Every newly elected Congress comes in on a two-year cycle. A new Congress is elected into office every 2 years. The entire House of Representatives is re-elected or elected every 2 years. And one-third of the Senate also is elected every 2 years. And the Library of Congress refers to each Congress based on a number. The current Congress, which began operations on January 3rd, 2025, and will stay in office until January 3rd, 2027, is the 119th Congress. 119.
And which one did they call the first one the Philadelphia Convention?
No, the first one was the first Congress that met in New York, and, well, they took office in April, although I don't think they started doing business until May. I think that's when they had the quorum of 1789.
obviously after the switch from Article.
Yeah, the Constitution had to go into effect. You had to have the elections in order for the first Congress to begin. All right. Now, just to further confuse you, every term is divided into sessions. The sessions generally are the year. But of course, the business year for Congress begins on when they start, on their inauguration day, which is January 3rd. So this session that the 119th Congress currently is in is referred to as the first session of the 119th Congress. January 3, 2026 will be session 2. The session lasts as long as the Congress wishes to be in session. Typically, they go from January all the way to January in the first session, but in the second session, they go January to October to give them time to go back to their districts and run for re-election. Now, this term system has been changed from the original Constitution. It was impacted by the 20th Amendment. Originally, the term for both Congress and the President, if you look through Article 1 and Article 2, the term was supposed to begin on March 4th. But if you think about it, if the election's in November and you go all the way to March, that's what, 4 months? 4 months' time? Well, that essentially means that the current sitting president and the current sitting Congress, if they were not reelected, they're sitting there acting as lame ducks. And if you're not going back to Congress, that's probably a time when you're going to engage in shenanigans. Same thing if you were the president. So, when the 20th Amendment was ratified, they decided to change it to the current dates. January 3rd for Congress, January 20th for the president. Questions. Now, what prompted Congress to propose this, and what caused the states, the two-thirds of Congress to propose it, and the three-quarters of states to ratify? Well, American history. Abraham Lincoln was elected president in November 1860, but James Buchanan remained a lame duck president all the way to March. It was when James Buchanan was still president that the southern states began to secede. And he did not do a thing. In fact, one of the things that James Buchanan is most blamed for is that he didn't do any effort to move United States military equipment out of all of the forts that were in the south. So when the southern states seceded, they simply took possession of U.S. arsenals. And that's one of the reasons why many military historians attribute the South's ability to basically win almost every single major battle for the first 3 or 4 years of the Civil War. Well, if Lincoln became president on January 20th, at that point, the only states who seceded, I think it was, I don't remember the order of secession. I know South Carolina was first, but I think only two or three states had seceded by January. So we might not have had another civil war. He might have been able to negotiate with them. But given that extra months, by the time Lincoln became in, I think it was up to 9. Or maybe all 11 had seceded at that point. I don't remember. It's been a long time since I've taught this. 1916. The presidential election of 1916. Woodrow Wilson gets reelected, promising not to get the United States involved in World War I. But before he took the oath for his second term, suddenly the United States gets involved in World War I. It was after the Zimmerman telegram, and there was an explosion down at a munitions plant, and Germany unleashed unrestricted submarine warfare. No, that Lusitania was in 1915. So,
is that the ship that was sunk?
Yes. Had Wilson started in January 20th, you know what could have happened? He might not, or he might have been impeached for getting us involved in the war, because he basically lied to the American people. You know, don't know what the outcome would have been, but it might have been different. Might have impacted the election. And then, of course, 1932, you had the whole Great Depression. FDR won, beating. I'm drawing a blank. Who was the president of the Great Depression, sir?
Herbert Hoover.
Thank you. Wait, was it really? Yeah, it was. Yeah, that was good. Man, I was having a wicked brain. I kept saying Coolidge. No, Coolidge was out before that. Herbert Hoover. So Herbert Hoover was there when the Great Depression hit. He loses re-election in November on 32. He doesn't do a damn thing because he's like, it's not my job anymore. I don't care. Now, not saying that he could have stopped the tide of the Great Depression, but it's possible he could have rallied Congress to do something. So like the whole unit on federalism, the government, the nature of the government changed in reaction to the circumstances of the day. And the only way to make sense of the change is to understand what was going on. So to understand political science, you have to know history. Lame duck period. That's what I was just talking about. Lame duck period. When the people that are there might have lost are still in office. All right. Now, getting back to Gage's question a little while ago. What is Congress? Well, the Congress is comprised of not one chamber, but two. The United States Senate and the United States House of Representatives. This is based on the Great Compromise, sometimes called the Connecticut Compromise. This was the agreement that got the Founding Fathers, who were divided based on big states and small, to agree to work together and finish the Constitution. This is one of the most important agreements in United States history, because without this, there would be no country, or we would have been very, very different. Why two? Why not just one? Anybody know? That's it. In order for a bill to get to the president's desk, it has to pass through both. Well, if the House of Representatives passes something that the Senate doesn't like because it's not good for the states, the senators are not going to vote for it. And thus the bill dies. It forces compromise between the representatives of the people and the representatives of the states, to make sure, essentially, that they're focused on the common good. Bicameralism, two chambers. Questions on that? All right. Let's start with the United States Senate. The original intent, as I've said a couple of times, is to represent the states. Why? Well, the Founding Fathers understood human nature. They understood that human beings individually are selfish, self-centered, greedy, also lazy, self-interested. So we want what's good for us. We don't care what's good for other people. It's about me, me, me. Well, me, me, me is represented in the House of Representatives. Thank you. I know it was a brilliant point. But the states? Well, the states are comprised of governments. Governments that are elected by all of the people in that jurisdiction. So by the very nature, by having the state government, that is basically going to temper the me, me, me's and kind of force compromise. So one way to diffuse the impulses of individuals is to put the collective in there as a counterweight. Plus also, don't forget, the states, when the Constitution made, were independent sovereign countries. I mean, we call them states as some type of secondary unit, but if you look in the dictionary of what a state is, there is a reference to it being a country. So obviously, no two countries want the same thing. So by giving the country's representation in what was presumed to be the upper chamber, that's a way to maintain stability, maturity, professionalism, as opposed to the irrational impulses of any given moment. To understand the design of the Senate, you must look in Article 1, Section 3 of the Constitution. Article 1, Section 3, Clause 1. How many senators does every state get? Two. Very good, Rich. Two. Can it change? Can that number ever change? Yes, it can. But what do you have to do? You have to amend the Constitution. Exactly. Okay, so that's... Well, it can change.
I guess everything could change.
Right, exactly.
Use that.
But how easy is the amendment process?
Not easy.
Exactly. That's by design. So, chances are for the rest of your lives and the lives of your kids and their kids, if our country is still here, it will maintain two. Now, the irony is that means California, Texas, New York, Florida, which are the most populous states, have the same number of senators as Rhode Island, Minnesota, Montana, Utah. The least populous states. But again, that's the compromise. The Virginia Plan called for a system where representation in Congress would be based on population alone. That would have simply meant that California could have controlled the country if that would have been in our system. And to be honest with you, not meaning to knock anyone's personal politics, but are you paying attention to what's going on in California? It's not good. It's not good, to say the least. Most expensive state to live in other than Hawaii. Gas prices are like $9 a gallon. You have a government that can't get out of its own way. The fires, they had fires because they didn't maintain all the reserve ponds, which the fire department.
The Delta smelt.
Oh yeah, the Delta smelt. Well, the Founding Fathers realized, again, don't forget, they were also opposed to democracy also, because they felt people were stupid. So if you would allow it to be based on majoritarianism, would that be actually the common good? Would the interests of most be covered? No. So, Rhode Island is tiny. Vermont, New Hampshire, those are tiny states. But they got equal representation in the body that represents the states. Now, Article 1, Section 3, Clause 1 also puts some qualifications in. If you decide to run for U.S. Senate, you will serve a 6-year term. This was intentionally meant to be longer than a presidential term, as well as a term for a member of the House of Representatives. The Senate was supposed to be kind of like the Roman Senate. That was the council of the elders, the people who were the most knowledgeable, the people that were the most capable. So if this is supposed to be, to a degree, the upper chamber, then you want someone who's going to be there for a longer period of time to pretty much know what they're doing. But in Article 1, Section 3, Clause 1, it also states that the states have all of the senatorial terms that are staggered, because they didn't want the entire Senate to be reelected every 6 years. So that's the reason why I said 1/3 goes every 2 years. So if all 1/3 of the senators get unelected, you still have 2/3 of the senators who were there in place to kind of mentor the new senators coming in. Of course, that has never happened in our history, and when we talk about elections, we'll deal with the power of incumbency. Thank you. I promise I'll not let you down in the room next door. I love it when another class gives presentations, because they're applauding for me. All right.
Self-interest?
100%. It's all about LeManic, in LeManic's head. All right. To actually run, you must be 30 years old on Inauguration Day. So on January 3rd, if you run for Senate, that you must be 30 years old by that point. You also must live in the state that you are representing. As much as I may want to be the U.S. Senator for Rhode Island, I live in Sutton. I can't do it. Now, the states all make their own rules on how long you have to live in the state to run for the Senate. Some states, like New York, allow for carpetbaggers. All you have to do is just live in the state at the point when you run for election. Massachusetts has, I think there's a requirement that you're in state for 5 or 6 years before you can run for a U.S. office from Massachusetts. But every state's different.
Romney. Where did he go?
Romney. So that was the controversy. Romney wanted to run for U.S. Senate, but at the time he ran for U.S. Senate, he also had a residence in Utah. So he got in on a technicality because he also owned a property in Massachusetts. But what our state never did is Governor Bill Weld at the time never forced him to prove that his house in Massachusetts was his actual primary residence. By the way, under IRS regulations, your primary residency is determined where you spend 50% of the year plus 1 day. So if you have a house, but you spend 9 months living in another state, you're not a resident of Massachusetts. But Romney, because Weld wanted a Republican to run, Romney ended up losing. you know? Yeah. That's why he moved to Utah and then ran for Senate. Screwed things up. He never would have got reelected. That's the reason why he decided to step down after one term. All right, so qualifications. 30 years old, have to be a resident of the state. Oh, what happens if you're foreign born? Can you run for United States Senate?
Yeah, you can.
Absolutely. But you must be a U.S. resident for 9 years.
Citizen too, right?
Yeah, citizen. Yeah, U.S. citizen. Sorry.
No, it's okay. If not, I would have been quite shocked.
Yeah, no, I misspoke, yeah. U.S. citizen for 9 years. Why nine? Well, when the Constitution was drafted and put into effect, that would have been 1788. Why did they go back 9 years? No idea. Because you were still in the middle of the War for Independence, which technically started in 1776 with the Declaration of Independence. But that was just the number they chose. All right. Two other items in terms of the Senate. Originally, senators were chosen by the state legislatures. So they didn't run for election. They were selected. And every single state had their own rules. Massachusetts, both the House and the Senate, I think you had to get a 2/3 nomination vote. But some other states just had a majority. But every state was allowed to craft their own rules. Actually, I think Pennsylvania allowed the governor to appoint. But again, the original 13, you know, those are the rules. But this process, of course, was upended when the 17th Amendment was ratified. The 17th Amendment was ratified in 1913. That created a popular election for U.S. Senate. So now every single state, every person in the state has a chance to vote for who they want to be their senator. All right, so two from every state, 6-year terms. The entire Senate is staggered every 2 years, 1/3 every 2 years. 30 years to run, 30 years to serve, 9 years U.S. citizen, resident of the state. Now, today, because of the 17th Amendment, chosen by popular election. By the way, there is a movement, and it's not a large one, but I've been reading about it for many years, about the desire to repeal the 17th Amendment, because the consequence of popularly electing the senators is what we got in Massachusetts. We have two Democrat senators who are not interested in serving the needs of all the people of Massachusetts or the United States. It's become partisan. And by the way, in places like Texas and Utah, same thing. The senators are elected and they're not there serving the needs of everybody. They're serving the needs of the Republican Party. So those people that want to repeal the 17th Amendment basically want to take partisanship out of the Senate. So if you want to have party fighting in the House, fine. But get rid of partisanship. Is that ever going to go anywhere? I don't think so.
You think it's a good idea?
Yeah, I do. Because if you listen to Elizabeth Warren, for example, when Biden was president, a Democrat president, Biden should do this, Biden should do that, Biden should do this. And now you have Trump. Trump is Satan. Even if it's the same policy. And that doesn't help anybody.
Right.
You know, I understand people by nature want to be rah, rah, rah for their own team. But if, at the end of the day, if it's a Democrat idea or a Republican idea and it's good for the common good, that's what we need more of.
That's how it was designed to be.
That's exactly how it was designed to be.
That's why I don't like that you have these representatives that spend all year in D.C. instead of all year...
Right.
In and amongst their constituents.
And by the way, that wasn't the case. Previously, before the invention of air conditioning, the Congress usually only met late winter, early spring, and then they spent their summers at home. and then maybe they went back in the fall. That should be the case.
Yeah, absolutely should.
But it is what it is. All right. Now, the Constitution does grant to the Senate specific powers. So these are powers that only the Senate can use. And there are four. From Article 2, Section 2, Clause 2. The Senate, as I said, has the power to ratify treaties. Senate has the power to ratify treaties by a two-thirds vote. It needs a supermajority. Power to ratify treaties, two-thirds vote. Also from Article 2, Section 2, Clause 2, the Senate, as I said, approves presidential nominations. They give their advice and consent. There is no constitutional requirement, so it's a majority vote. So, RFK, didn't he get like 51 votes? That was enough. All right. So, ratify. Approve appointments. Impeachment. According to Article 1, Section 3, Clause 6, if the House impeaches an executive officer or a member of the judiciary, what the House is doing is the House is accusing that person of criminal actions. But once the House submits articles of impeachment, the Senate holds the trial. If you were watching the most recent impeachment, which happened at the end of Trump's first term, you would know that the only way that the federal officer or judge can be basically punished is by a two-thirds vote. So, Trump was impeached twice. Bill Clinton was impeached once, and President Andrew Johnson was impeached once. The four presidential impeachment processes, none of them were found guilty by the Senate.
And Nixon wasn't officially impeached?
Nixon was not impeached because the House never formalized articles of impeachment. He resigned. Why? Because he knew he was getting screwed.
He gets a bad rap.
Oh, yeah, totally. You know the reporter, I can't remember his name, that wrote the book that broke the, like, came up with the whole Deep Throat?
Yeah.
He was actually a CIA plant.
Well, that doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, and the CIA, the military-industrial complex, was going after Nixon because Nixon wanted to end Vietnam. He also wanted to negotiate and open up China to do business with, basically ending the Cold War. And he was also going to release the information on JFK's assassination.
Which just happened. Did you see that?
It did.
Did you see that?
I haven't had a chance to go through everything yet.
There's one document of police.
Yeah, don't spoil it for me, because I do intend on spending some time finding whatever else I can find. But all right, so ratify treaties, approve appointments, conduct impeachment trials. And last but not least, under the 12th Amendment, if there is no candidate who receives a majority of electoral votes in a presidential election, the Senate picks who becomes vice president. There is no majority vote for vice president, the Senate picks.
What about, like, what is it, like, plurality? What's elimination?
Plurality?
Yeah.
What about it?
Wouldn't they don't use that to...
No, in order to become president or vice president, you must get a majority in the Electoral College. But if there is no majority, the Senate picks.
But couldn't they eliminate someone?
No.
No.
No, the Senate, by the 12th Amendment, the Senate has to take the two top two vote getters and decide between the two.
Oh, it's only between two people?
Yeah.
Oh.
Now, when the House does it, according to the 12th Amendment, the House picks the top three. And when we do elections, we'll talk about it, because that's actually happened. Both has happened in U.S. history before.
So when do they do the plurality?
Plurality?
Yeah.
We don't have... Well, I suppose if you're doing a state election, or a U.S. Senate election...
I just don't... that works.
Okay, keep in mind the presidential elections are done through the Electoral College.
Yeah.
Right. But plurality refers to a situation where a candidate gets less than a majority. Okay. They just get the most votes.
Yeah, okay.
So, technically, not that the popular... Now, I'm going to say this as clearly as I can. We do not use the popular vote to elect our presidents. The popular vote is not relevant to the election of our presidents. The Electoral College is the system we use. But sometimes the news reporters will use that phrase, oh, the president didn't get a majority of popular votes, because what the press is trying to do is they're trying to undermine their credibility. So if you were alive when, actually I don't think anyone was, and Zach, I think he said he was 32, so he probably doesn't remember. When Bill Clinton was elected president in 92, he did not get a majority in the popular vote because you had a third-party challenger. What ended up happening is they split the votes, but Clinton still got a majority in the Electoral College. So he was a plurality winner in the popular vote, but he still won. When he ran for re-election in 96, same thing happened again, making Bill Clinton not only a president who was impeached, but he was also the only president in U.S. history to win two terms without getting a majority in the popular vote. But what does that mean? Nothing, because he won the Electoral College. All right, other questions? All right. Now, the Senate sometimes is referred to as kind of like a gentleman's club, because it is a smaller body than the House of Representatives. So as a result, they don't have as many rules. It's more laid back. It's more open. It's more fluid. To a degree, it's decentralized. The Senate rules basically make it a chamber of equals. Each senator essentially has the same authority as everybody else in the body. There's no ranking members, per se. So as a result, for most of our history, prior to the last 20 or 30 years, senators were less about partisanship and more individualistic. So again, the only thing you've known is how hyper-partisan our country's become. But if you look at American history and you go back in time, what Congress, how it used to operate, it was more based on regional politics. So you'd kind of have like a loose-knit coalition of all of the elected officials in like the Northeast, Democrats or Republicans. They work together for interests of the Northeast. You'd have the South, you'd have the West.
You'd have, you know, the Pacific Coast.
So you had, to a degree, more bipartisanship. Because what they would try to do is make compromises. Try to get policy that was good for multiple regions. So, if you want to help out, you know, the ports along the Atlantic coast, you also want to pass legislation that's good to help the railroad interests. And you also want to pass legislation that might be good for, like, the coal mining regions. But you also have to supplement the workforce by supporting the agricultural regions. So policy used to be bigger. But now it's just basically the D's versus the R's, and it's frustrating for most American people. But if you listen to the hearings, go on C-SPAN, whoever watched the Senate, all the senators are doing is basically grandstanding. And that's the reason why, more often than not, then you'll see a Democrat or two or three or a Republican two or three basically vote against something that maybe the party wants. It's kind of funny. Like when John McCain was alive and he was serving Arizona, they used to call him a maverick because he at times was go against what the Republicans wanted. Although now, if a Democrat does that, look at what they're doing to Chuck Schumer. You know, the majority leader. They're basically calling him. Yeah, he voted to do the continuing resolution. The Republican bill that came out of the House. You know, nine Republicans. I'm sorry, nine Democrats voted, or ten.
No, I just meant him in particular, because he's like...
Well, you know something, as he said, in the progressive far left are trying to destroy him, but he's like... And it's the only time, really, in recent history, I remember Chuck Schumer, who is a hyperpartisan himself, actually said, at the end of the day, I got to make decisions that's good for the country, not just the party. He actually said that multiple times, because he's doing a book tour, too. And, of course, all the talking heads have beaten him up about it, but that's what we want.
Well, he's the one that understands, right? He understands the DNC is in a hole, and this is a way to get him out of it, and none of the other ones seem to...
Well, yeah, because I think I saw a CNN poll that the favorability rankings for the Democrat Party are the lowest ever. They're down like 27%.
Yeah. And then there was just a poll yesterday where they had to pick, they wanted to pick someone who was going to be the face of the party going forward. And the majority of, I think AOC got the most votes.
Yeah, but it wasn't a majority. She got 10%.
Right. But still the most out of any of them, which is showing that they have not learned their lesson from this past election.
And it's also showing them that they actually have no actual leader.
Right.
Yes, Republican is Trump has sucked up all the Republican air for the last 12 years, but he's done. So it's going to be interesting to see if someone like J.D. Vance, you know, can rise to the occasion. Because if that's the case, and the Republicans can hold their current coalition, which is mostly Democrats, the Republican Party could actually control politics for the next generation or two. But we'll see. Again, I reserve my right to criticize them, and I reserve my right to sit back and say the Republicans have a nasty history of screwing things up. So, all right. So we talked about how it operates. Now, in the Congress building, the Senate has its own wing. The Senate occupies what's known as the North Wing, which is this side of the building. This has their chamber in it, and this is the section where they have all of their offices. When the Senate is in session, they do follow what are called standing rules. These rules control the procedure that must be followed. And again, if you want to see the rules in operation, and I'm not going to make you remember any of the particular rules, but just put on C-SPAN. You know, the senator has a right to take the floor. In order for the senator to speak, he must be recognized by whoever is acting as the president of the chamber for the moment. And then if the president recognized the speaker can go on and talk to a certain amount of time that they all agreed for. And once the time is up, the speaker has to step down. Another interesting rule
the senators are not allowed to engage in ad hominem attacks against their fellow members
when the Senate is in session. Now, they can go on TV or they can go out before a group of people and call another member of the chamber a Nazi or a fascist or a commie. But if you get into the weeds while the Senate is in session in the Senate chambers, you can be censored. Censured. You can also be stripped of your seats on committees. There are punishments that the Senate president is allowed to implement. Now, unlike the House of Representatives, which constitutionally has a speaker, the Senate has no leading constitutional officer. So, the Senate basically chooses who is going to preside over the session in any set period. Now, typically, because of partisanship, the majority party controls who's going to be the presiding officer. And they generally try to rotate amongst all of their members to give equal time.
Now, interestingly enough,
they even do it with newly elected members.
So John Fetterman from Pennsylvania suffered a stroke, can barely communicate without the aid of technology. It's amazing what he can do. He has like a tablet and an auditory detector that has like instant AI that can pick up speech and display it on the screen because his brain can't process the auditory signals. So, but if he reads it, he can understand it.
So they actually allowed Fetterman to serve as presiding officer back when the Democrats had a majority.
And they passed a special rule that allowed him to have his technology with him.
Why? Well, even Republicans voted for it. Because like I said, it's a gentleman's club. It's a group of equals. All right. Now, the Senate operates officially by using two calendars. Two calendars. One is a Senate calendar that has listed on it the dates when all of the bills or resolutions that need to be acted upon are basically scheduled. So, if there's a bill scheduled for debate today, today is the day that it gets debated. The only time that they go off schedule is if something catastrophic happens, like a snowstorm that shuts down Washington, D.C. The senators have a right to basically amend the Constitution, amend the calendar. But everything is documented for predictability. Another thing that you'll notice if you watch C-SPAN is sometimes the senator will come late to a hearing. And of course they'll apologize to whoever the committee chairperson is. And they'll say, sorry, I was in another committee hearing. Because senators serve on multiple committees. So sometimes during the day they're bouncing around. Well, the only way they know where to go at a given time is with the calendar. There also is an executive calendar. The executive calendar shows out when are they going to have hearings for nominations, or when are they going to deal with treaties.
So the Senate calendar deals with senatorial stuff, and the executive calendar pretty much deals with stuff that comes out of the executive branch. And typically, on any given day, the Senate is engaged in one of three activities. They are either holding committee hearings, or they're having floor debates, or they're voting on measures. And of course, all of these activities are on the calendar, and you actually have the ability to go on ussenate.gov, and they actually have the calendars. So if you are a nerd like me and you hear about something that may be interesting, you can go on the calendar, see when the hearing is going to be held. Sometimes they'll list which C-SPAN channel it's going to be broadcast on, and you have the ability to sit at home and watch it. Now, obviously, if it's something big, you might be able to see it on regular broadcast cable news channels. So for some of the bigger secretaries, Tulsi and Hegseth and some of the others, you know, I know Fox News broadcasted it. I don't know if the other channels did, because I just left Fox News on and I was cleaning and doing schoolwork or whatever, kind of half-assed listening to it. But it could be on regular cable, again, if it's something big. But if not, that's what the C-SPANs are for, and I think there's three C-SPAN channels. One C-SPAN channel is for the House, one C-SPAN channel is for the Senate, and I think another one monitors the courts. All right, a few other little items that makes the Senate unique. Quirks, if you will. Above all else, like I said, generally speaking, when you compare it to the House of Representatives, in the Senate, it's less formal. Less formal in terms of procedural action. So, for example, on most items, there is no limit for debate. So, if the Senate is debating a bill, they don't put themselves under a time restraint. Meaning, an individual senator can take the mic and talk and talk and talk and talk and talk until he wants to pass the mic. Shh, I'm going to get to that. Each senator has the authority to add earmarks. Earmarks to any bill. So, if they are passing, say, a grant bill where the Senate wants to basically redistribute wealth, a senator can put in there, hey, I want $1 million for this pet project that I have in my home district. There's no restriction. Any senator can do that. Those are called earmarks. The Senate, each individual senators can also add riders, which are like attachment bills on a bill that's being voted on. And it doesn't have to be germane to whatever is being voted on. It doesn't have to be relevant. It doesn't have to be attached. So every now and then, again, they're playing the partisan game where maybe they'll put forth a bill for veterans funds. But an individual senator will put something in there that's maybe like, let's put federal money towards EV chargers. That has nothing to do with the nature of the bill. Doesn't matter. A senator can add that rider on. So often what happens is when the senators see the bill and all the things that are attached, even if they may have supported the original bill, they may vote against it. And it's not that they're against, say, supporting veterans. It's they don't like all the other crap that's been added to it. But again, that gives partisan opportunity. Oh, the Democrats hate veterans because they voted against this bill. No, the Democrats are voting against all the rioters. But that doesn't get fleshed out. That's the game that the politicians play. By the way, I don't know if I told you this, but I'll just throw it out there anyway. Random thought. You know, there is no procedural rule in either the House or the Senate that prohibits members of Congress from lying. Go figure. What do you mean?
Penalties of perjury.
They're not under oath.
Yeah, but they should.
Right. If you get called to go speak before Congress, you could go to jail if you get caught lying. But it doesn't apply to them.
Oh, like it definitely should.
Oh, I agree with you.
Like, they should be under oath.
100%. I agree with you.
Things would get shaken up
very hard.
Oh my God, imagine that. What would happen? They actually have to tell the truth?
That'd be an amendment.
Yeah, then who would be the judge of that?
Yeah. I guess that's what I'm trying to do.
Right. So that's when you go out into public and you call your Senate opponent, your colleague on the other side, you know, a Nazi or whatever, and then you get his voters to vote against him.
And didn't the founding fathers say that whatever the government does shouldn't be kept a secret from the public?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They called for open, transparent government. Do we follow that? No, not at all. Again, I've said it a couple of times. That's what's making Doge so infamous, because they're ripping the roof off of all of these government agencies and they're letting the light shine in. And the good thing about that, and again, I'm not saying everything that Doge has found I disagree with or I agree with. I'm not saying that. But I want transparency. I want to know where every single one of my tax dollars is going to. Because at the end of the day, do I want millions of dollars going to genetically remodify mice so they can become transgender? Or do I want more money going to offset healthcare costs?
I thought he was misspeaking, that he was referencing the transgenic mice.
What?
I thought he was referencing transgenic mice.
No, there was actually money that was going to biological resource research trying to create transgenic mice. Yeah. Don't know.
Apparently they don't either. They needed a lot of money to figure that out.
But again, it's being put out in the public. Everything they find is going on the Doge website, wherever, I think doge.gov or whatever. And it's given us a chance to look. And let's have conversations about it. You know, maybe it could serve some type of benefit, but I don't know.
Diversity in Bulgaria's workplaces.
Bulgaria. Or I like the Iraqi Sesame Street.
Yeah.
All right, unanimous consent agreements. Now, if you hear a committee hearing going on, generally speaking, what a unanimous consent agreement is both party leaders basically allow members of both parties to contribute anything they want into the record. And they do it without voting on every single last thing. So procedurally, if I wanted to submit into the record a study of transgenic mice to justify the expenditure, if they didn't have this rule, I would have to put it up before the committee hearing, and every single committee member would vote whether they're in favor of me submitting it as evidence or not. That would just take up time. So the Senate years ago basically decided both parties' members can submit anything they want. So if you watched any of the hearings, you know, the Republicans were trying to present evidence that made the nominations look good, and the Democrats were trying to present, newspaper headlines or stories that made the candidates look bad. And by the way, when the Democrats were in charge and there was a Democrat president, it was the exact opposite. So again, I'm not saying Republicans good, Democrats bad. It's just they change depending upon the situation. Another unique feature of the Senate is that any senator can request a delay on any of their procedural operations for any reason. It's called a hold. So, what does this mean? Well, what happens if the Senate has to begin debate on a piece of legislation that's 3,000 pages long, and each one get it dumped on their desk at 8 o'clock in the morning on the day they're supposed to vote on it? Well, the senator has a right to put in a request to hold. Give us a day so we can go through it. And if a senator requests it, it generally is granted without any resistance. And the hold will remain in place until the member who requested it rescinds it. Yes, a hold can be used to kill a bill. Because if a bill is held, that means it doesn't even go forward for review, for consideration. Is it partisan? Is it political? Yes. But again, both sides are allowed to do it equally. No restrictions. Quorums. Quorums. The Constitution requires that the Senate can only conduct business if a quorum is present. What's a quorum? Nobody knows what a quorum is? A quorum is the minimum numbers of members needed to be present. Under Senate rules, a majority must be present if the Senate is going to vote. What does present mean? Where? Somewhere in the building. Doesn't necessarily mean you have to be present in the chamber.
What about a
Zoom call? No. The Senate did enact rules that allowed for remote during the COVIDs,
yeah.
But they suspended those.
Okay.
So now if you're going to vote, you are only allowed to vote in person. By the way, the Senate ended it really quick. The House kept it going for a long period of time. Now here's the interesting thing. And I'm not going to do, I got to do filibuster, but I'm going to need to do that next week or after vacation. Filibuster is just too complicated. With a quorum is, by Senate rules, always presumed. Meaning, every single time when a quorum is needed, they don't do a head count before they proceed. They assume that there's enough members there because all of the senators have assistants, interns, pages, whatever you want to call them. And if a senator is needed to get the floor to vote, the page, the assistant, will go find the senator wherever he is in the building and drag him into the chamber so he can vote. So they have to be there before the procedure ends. They don't have to be there when it begins. So again, if you're a C-SPAN junkie, you will see times when a senator runs into the chamber, quickly votes, and then runs out. Same thing with the hearings, the committee hearings. There's always a requirement that there's a majority of the committee members present. But if you watch a hearing, members are coming and going. So, in the modern era, present generally means contactable and somewhere in the vicinity where they can get to where they need to be. Even if it means they're in another one of the buildings in Washington, D.C. and they get put in a car and they get rushed over. All right, now FYI, if a member calls for a quorum call,
then a head count has to be taken by the clerk. And if a quorum is not present, the Senate has to be adjourned for the rest of the day. How often does it happen? Rarely. But if a senator really wanted to force the issue, because he knows so many members are not quickly, easily accessible, that is a tactic they can use to delay a hearing or a vote. All right, so for the people who came late, just as a reminder, your exam will be tomorrow. That's what we voted on Thursday. It will open up at 8 a.m. It will go until 11:59 p.m. It should take you 75 minutes, because that's how long it will take. The structure is still the same, 30 multiple choice questions. There is a matching section, and there are two essay questions. And within each essay questions are two sub-questions. You pick one sub-question. This stuff from today will not be on the exam. Political opinion, federalism will. All right. Yeah. Have a nice vacation, spring break. Hopefully you're going somewhere nice. If you're only going home, make sure you give Mom and Dad a hug and thank them for allowing you to come to college and learn stuff from Lamanic.
Yeah, I'm going to be going home and work home.
Me too. Isn't that going to be a fun break? But you got to make the bucks somehow.
Because no one's going to make it for you.
That's very true.